We'll discuss race and how it plays a factor, and how we didn't even talk about this topic because we were afraid.
A Black Executive Perspective.
Welcome to BEP Live on the Black Executive Perspective. I'm your host, Tony Tidbit.
And I'm Chris P. Reed. We cut through the noise and get straight to what matters here. Live with you. Power, politics, culture, leadership, and the moment shaping our lives right now. No filters, no safe take, just honest dialogue and real accountability. So let's get into it.
Absolutely, my friend. So last night, we marked the birthday and legacy of Martin Luther King Jr., a man who fought to make America live up to its own promises. Tonight, we're drawing a direct line from the Civil Rights Act to today, where Donald Trump is claiming that white Americans are being treated unfairly. We're going to talk about how Black Americans were treated before the civil rights protections existed, why those laws were necessary, and how equality is now being reframed as discrimination. Hey, this is about history, power, and what happens when truth makes people feel uncomfortable.
All right, well, let's jump right into it.
Let's do it, my brother. So look, man, I know you know this, and I think a lot of people do, to be fair, but, you know, I know people don't study history like that we did before, but before the Civil Rights Act, segregation wasn't accidental, okay? It was legal. Black Americans were denied housing, education, jobs, voting access, protection, basic protections under the law. This wasn't about preference, to be fair, right? It was about survival. So civil rights laws didn't just give Black people special treatment. They removed the legalized oppression that was going on for centuries, right? The danger today, and this is where we are, right, is talking about civil rights without talking about the conditions that required them. Because most people, they don't remember what yesterday showed up, what happened yesterday. Okay, last year, what's this, January 2020, right?
Yep,
2025 just ended 3 weeks ago. They can't remember that, all right?
Right,
so
right.
When you don't know history and it's forgotten, right? You're easily, like, what are you talking about? Well, they got this, and you forget what Black people, African-American people had to go through, all right, just to vote. Okay, just to go into stores and all that type of stuff, which we're going to dive into.
Absolutely. And, you know, the true dynamics of King and the celebration of the King holiday was not civil rights for Black people. It was civil rights for all.
Everybody.
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 He wanted a society that was civil to everyone. So it shows you that there was a level of instability and non-civil treatment to Black and brown folks in general, women and all of that, right? But he wanted civility for everyone. And so exactly what you're saying, Tony, people don't know what time it, like, at that time, this is not a new thing. This was going on for a very long time before a groundswell finally came up to the point where it made enough sense, not only for Black people, but keep in mind, there was no Black senator, House of Representatives, Senate Majority Leaders. These was white folks that realized, dang, they have a point. Dang, this stuff needs to be taken care of. And we just rang the gong so much that they realized it wasn't going away. And with MLK coming up now as being a leader for all, see, that's what we miss. And see, we see leaders of parties as opposed to leaders of what's right, leaders of justice. And we forget we used to have leaders of all. So let's take a moment to see how he made us aware that everybody deserves some of these inalienable rights, and how we were being infringed upon as Black and brown people in this great country.
What is it about the Negro? I mean, every other group that came as an immigrant somehow, not easily, but somehow got around it. Is it just the fact that Negroes are Black?
White America must see that no other ethnic group has been a slave on American soil. That is one thing that other immigrant groups haven't had to face. The other thing is that the color became a stigma. American society made the Negro's color a stigma. America freed the slaves in 1863 through the Emancipation Proclamation of Abraham Lincoln, but gave the slaves no land, are nothing in reality, and as a matter of fact, to get started on. At the same time, America was giving away millions of acres of land in the West and the Midwest, which meant that there was a willingness to give the white peasants from Europe an economic base. And yet it refused to give its black peasants from Africa, who came here involuntarily in chains and had worked free for 244 years, any kind of economic base. And so emancipation for the Negro was really freedom to hunger. It was freedom to the winds and rains of heaven. It was freedom without food to eat or land to cultivate, and therefore it was freedom and famine at the same time. And when white Americans tell the Negro to lift himself by his own bootstraps, they don't look over the legacy of slavery and segregation. I believe we ought to do all we can and seek to lift ourselves by our own bootstraps, but it's a cruel jest to say to a bootless man that he ought to lift himself by his own bootstraps. And many Negroes, by the thousands and millions, have been left bootless as a result of all of these years of oppression and as a result of a society that deliberately made his color a stigma and something worthless and degrading.
And obviously, it's easy to make color a stigma because no matter what I sound like on the telephone, when you see me, you see me. So they did mention all other immigrants. He mentioned that. You know, why are we being infringed upon greater than any other portion of the immigration population? But the reality is we can't pass. No matter what we sound like, no matter how it's articulate or whatever, you could use the king. You could have a British accent, Tony. You black as hell. So the fact is.
Can't take it off.
Man, you can't. So the level of assimilation made it easy for us. We was low-hanging fruit, easy targets in that regard. That's number one. Number two, as he said, people don't realize they were giving this stuff away and making sure other people had a foothold.
Irish.
Or
Scottish.
Man.
Italians.
Now, what they will say is, well, we were segmented in certain ghettos and given hard jobs as, you know, cops and jobs that white folks, good Christian white folks didn't necessarily want, but we weren't even given that. You know what I
right.
mean?
And
so when you look at the fact that, A, yes, it was easier for us to be singled out and tranched upon. And then B, it just made it a situation where because of the hue of our skin, we were easy targets. And then it just got baked more and further into the system. It was a system situation. Go ahead.
Right. Here's the thing, though. Let's just make sure we're clear, though, right? So this was in 1967. This wasn't even 60 years ago. Just be clear here, okay? And Dr. King is explaining, because even then, the dude's question was, well, what's taking black people so long to get this stuff? That's basically what his question is, right?
Yep.
And so he's answering the question with a level of history, right? That even the reporter probably didn't even recognize or remember, right? Mm-hmm. Because it's quick to say, oh, you guys should be great now. You should be doing this. You should, like you said, pull yourselves up by your bootstraps.
Bootstraps, yep.
60 years, right? And so, but let's just be fair. So he laid out. And he could have been talking for hours, to be fair. But he just gave you a quick sense of history, okay, in terms of how things were set up. He didn't get into segregation, all those type things. He didn't get into the disparities in terms of voting and housing and all those other things that African-American people didn't have access to, okay, that the Constitution said you did as being a citizen, okay? So he held them to that, right? Now, let's get back to our point, though. This was pre-civil rights.
That's correct.
Okay? This
That's
was
correct.
Again, guys, 67 here. Okay? This
right.
is pre-civil rights.
Right.
Okay? Now, everybody, well, that's Dr. Martin Luther King. He's saying that. You know, we hear that all the time. So let's take it to, go ahead, buddy, before we take it to the next level.
Let me say this, because we did a show not too long ago, maybe a month ago, about the Revolutionary War. And the fact that many of the people who created this country were immigrants. So a lot of that immigration type language was written into the Constitution, into how this country was built. But then what happened was, when you talk to an Irish person or a Scottish person or somebody from somewhere else, the time frame in which they were infringed upon is this small. You don't have the same level of struggle. So when the guy is saying, hey, it's been 100 years, what the hell is y'all doing? It was never said. We were always excluded based on these dynamics. So don't compare us to these folks that were also not from here. Y'all not from here, first and foremost. But the more important part is because we couldn't fit in and do all that easily because of the skin tone, they made a system that made it harder. And we were so far behind the eight ball. And like he said, you can't take a first step without boots on.
There's no question, right? And just to clarify that, Italians, Irish, we can name every Polish. When they first came here, they were discriminated against.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. But it didn't last hundreds of years.
That's correct.
They didn't create laws and said, you Irish, you got to go get in the back of the bus.
Absolutely.
You Italian, you can't
Absolutely.
Vote. Okay?
Absolutely.
So, and they didn't create this as well.
My mother told me when she was a little girl, it was against the law for a black person to go to a white dentist. If you were a little child and you needed your teeth taken out, like all children do, if you're a little black child and you needed your teeth taken out and you couldn't find a black dentist, you had to go to a vet. Yeah, a vet in America. I'm talking about my mother. I'm not talking about Harriet Tubman. I'm talking about my mother. She's sitting over there, okay? My mother went to a vet, okay?
You know, the problem that it reminds me of is this whole, when are y'all going to get over it? And why aren't y'all accepting that, you know that things are better than what this stuff is not that long ago. What'd you say, 60 years, Tony?
Yeah, but see, this is the point here. Chris Rock is talking about his mother, okay? They couldn't go to a white dentist, okay? His mother, all right? His mother was born in 1945. My mother was born in 1944. So in the 1950s, his mother, people could not go to a white dentist because at the end of the day, if the white people found out that the dentist used the tools on them, the dude would be out of business. So they had to go to a vet. So again, these things are like they happened hundreds of years ago. They didn't. His mother's telling him that story. It ain't his great-great-great-great-grandmother. This is his mother telling an honest truth how she grew up in what, Mississippi, North Carolina, South Carolina. I forget what state they grew up in, right? Those are real. And so think about it for a second. We're talking 50, 60 years ago before African-American people had full citizenship rights.
Yes, sir.
For some reason, it's framed like this is, we've had this forever. And we're just sitting down under a shade tree and not doing anything.
Correct.
Okay? It's so erroneous. And it makes, so let's put in the context of 60 years. Okay? Because for whatever reason, people think that it's been centuries. 60. So I was born in 64. Okay, when I was born, there wasn't even a civil rights law in terms of the Voting Rights Act.
Right. Right.
Think of that.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Think of that.
Right.
Okay. And there was still red. There were redlining. There were all these things that were still that black people did not have access to. Okay. They had to go to black colleges. Okay, they couldn't go to. Come on, guys, wake up! You ever heard of Little Rock? Heard where the governor or in Alabama where they stood in front of the door?
Yep.
And little was it James Meredith and Little Rock, right? And I forget it was the James Meredith was Alabama. You had the Little Rock Nine in Arkansas, right? Where
High,
both governors, thank you, both governors stand before the door and it was like, what's his name? I forget his name. Wallace.
Yeah. Wallace,
segregation now, segregation for days, segregation forever.
Forever.
Okay.
Yep.
This would think about that. This was during my lifetime.
Yes. You have first-person accounts. We have first-person accounts, literally, today. Today, this day in the calendar, you can get a first-person eyewitness account of what was going on.
All right? And so all of a sudden now, this is like, oh, you guys, what's going on? you kidding me? You kidding me?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But once again, people who don't want to know won't look, won't ask, won't inquire. And they'll just bury their head in the sand and accept whatever narrative they're provided. But the idea of, it's the oldest trick in the book, right? You married. So the oldest trick in the book when you're young is when she mad at you, you act like you mad at her. You know what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying? So in the idea of we've shown you evidence of discrimination. And now all of a sudden you acting like, you know what I'm saying? I'm infringed upon too. I'm hurt too. My sensitivities have been challenged as well. That type of, it's just, we should be better than this. We should have grown from this, but I think it's hard to grow when people are purposely. My mom, you say this, I'll put you on my back, but don't drag your feet. So if you got somebody, think about this physically. You putting somebody on your back to carry them, and then they let their feet drop and hang and dragging it to make the carry that much harder. You putting yourself in a situation where you are making it hard for us to get past these things and get over these things because you aren't letting the system do as instructed or as intended.
Here's the thing, though, bro. It's not. So I'm missing your point here. So when you said, so who are you talking about?
I'm talking about the administration now.
Okay, so then be specific. Okay, so be specific. So what are you talking about?
The administration now today. So think about it like this. At the time, I think Lyndon Baines Johnson was the Senate president, Civil Rights Act, 1964, okay? You with me?
Yeah, bro, but let's go to what Trump said first, then let's go back to that.
Okay, cool.
Does that make sense? We was doing history, so I was getting to my history. No, I get it. But let's make the parallel, then let's go back to that, right?
Okay, cool.
Because
right,
when you were saying people dragging, who's the one that's saying this shit wasn't real? Okay?
Or it's like it was unfair
to other people, right? Sure. So let's dive into that.
Right.
Let's go now to a new nugget from President Trump's three-hour interview with the New York Times. He told reporters civil rights led to white people being, quote, very badly treated. The Times characterized his comments as a blunt distillation of his administration's racial politics, which rests on the belief that white people have become the real victims of discrimination in America. Here's what the president said when asked about race and his immigration policy.
I want to ask if part of your immigration agenda is also aimed at changing the racial makeup of this country.
No, not at all.
Is part of this agenda aimed
at... I just want people that love our country.
Well.
It's very simple. I want people that love our country. I want people that respect our country, respect the laws of our country.
See, he wants people to kiss the ass of America. He wants people to bow down and say, oh, I appreciate you coming in and lifting, allowing me to be here. Thank you so much for allowing me to be here. Thank you. Certain amount of people, certain folks, if they have, he either want them to pay for it or he want them to beg for it. Right. But the Constitution was written with inalienable rights and things that are reserved for American citizens. Now we're trying to segment who's an American citizen. But what old man Grandpa Trump doesn't understand about his recollection of civil rights is that these people, your peers, your predecessors, understood the need for the black folks don't make laws in 64. You get me? It's Mike Mansfield, the majority leader. It's John McCormick, the Speaker of the House. These folks, but his cognizant, you know, faculties are becoming in question too, Trump. So maybe he got early onset or something. But the reality of it is, in the idea of I want to make the country better by causing divisiveness and making white folks victims. I don't see how there's a direct line to that. I don't see how he feels like something that was determined by the lawmakers at the time, which were all white, to be something that was required based on the evidence, was a bad idea or a bad thing when the data doesn't support it. What the data did support was prior to the Civil Rights Act, you could bring case after case after instance, people going to the veterinarian to get their teeth pulled. Like, it was too easy to discriminate against those who weren't white, non-whites. The laws did not make it easy to discriminate against whites. That just didn't happen.
Like, Chris.
Yeah.
So here's the thing, though, bro.
Yeah.
So I hear you. And nothing you're not saying is not factual. So I'm all that. Here's the thing. The dude's doing it on purpose, okay? You can go all day long
in terms of
the facts. It's on purpose, okay? So let's be fair. Let's dive deeper into what specifically he said. And then let's comment to it, okay?
Okay.
White people were very badly treated, where they did extremely well and they were not invited to go into a university to college, Trump told the New York Times, referring to affirmative action in college admissions, which was struck down by the U.S. Supreme Court in 2023. The president added, So I would say in that way, I think it was unfair in certain cases. The president continued his thoughts about the Civil Rights Act, telling the Times, I think it was also, at the same time, it accomplished some very wonderful things, but it also hurt a lot of people. People that deserve to go to college or deserve to get a job or unable to get a job. So it was a reverse discrimination.
First of all, I don't believe in the term reverse discrimination because discrimination has an absolute value. That's number one. To anybody that's uneducated, think about that, marinate with it. Discrimination is discrimination, period. Number two, he's saying that people who could have went to college didn't. That's exactly why the act was in place, was because there was qualified individuals that could get jobs and that could go to college that weren't allowed the opportunity. What is he? It didn't exclude anyone.
So look, bro, I hear you, right? But so I want to say, but the thing is, we know that most people, here's the thing though. We just got finished talking in our first segment, but most people they can't remember about last year.
Right.
Okay. They don't, right. The context of civil rights seemed like it was hundreds of years ago.
Right.
Okay. So you can say stuff like that. And the majority, if you'd have said this in 67 or 72, right, you would have had a ton of more people screaming, like, what is he talking about? It wouldn't even be an issue. I mean, not an issue. It would be like the majority of people, even the people that's racist would be like, yeah, I don't know what he's talking about. All right. But when you're in a situation today where people are divided and you use race to divide people, okay? And at the end of the day, the majority of people are social media fanatics. I told you, they can't remember. They don't know nothing. Buddy, I'm just telling you. So you can do this. Plus, there's a bigger strategy, Chris.
Right.
Okay.
Right,
so this ain't just somebody throwing something out there. Okay. And just like, you, to your point, I don't understand why he don't understand that. And this and that, he understands it. It's a bigger strategy. Okay. It's trying to roll stuff back. It's continually with immigration and all these things. And this is why we played the first part with Martin Luther King saying, when the person asked him, like, is it because they're black? And he said, absolutely. When you demonize skin tone, okay, and you make anybody with dark skin less than, they're not intelligent, they're inferior, and this and that, right? And then anybody lighter than them, even though they could be bums, even though they can be the lazy of the lazies, but from a hierarchical standpoint, they're better based on what the narrative that they pushed out, then it's easy to demonize individuals, right? But to sit here and say that white people were discriminated against.
Yes. Victims.
Okay.
Yes.
This is be fair, right? Yeah. When there was, I don't remember no law saying white people couldn't get on a bus. Okay, I don't remember no law saying white people only could go to these type of schools. I can go on. We can go on and on and on. But this is important, right? And they're doing it on purpose. Okay, and so that's the problem. Okay, they're doing it, and then not only that. When did this come out? It didn't come out last 6 months ago. It didn't come out 3 months from now. It comes out a week before Martin Luther King's birthday.
Absolutely.
That ain't luck. That ain't coincidence. That's right. On purpose, right? In which right. We're going to dive into it, right? But hold on, right. Before we go, we got a lot of comments here. So
okay,
let me dive into some of the comments. So who is this? I don't know. I'm just LCMG Mag 23. So okay. Right, Chris, let me put it up on the screen here, right? Chris, you're right. Martin Luther King was the leader of the party. He was a leader of a movement. He called out shortcomings for those who failed to act in unity, whoever they were. Exactly. There was no Asian senators in 1960. Yep. 65. There was no Hispanic congressman in 1965. There was no women, okay, that was running for office in night. So you see my point here, okay?
Right.
So excuse me, that was your point, right?
Right.
And so we got Reginald here. What does Reginald say? He says, what did he say? History is something that continues to reveal truth. Are we repeating it? That's an excellent point, buddy. But most people don't read.
Right.
They don't know. They don't, because they don't want to know. You remember the flick? What was that? Remember what was that? Remember the Titans? Okay. When what was it? Sunshine was trying to take them out for like a bite to eat after
dinner,
practice.
And
what Petey said, man, we can't go in there. They don't want us to go in there, which was in Virginia in in the 70s, early 70s.
Right, 70s.
True story, right? So again, he was like, they don't want, he said, no, man, it's on me. And then they tried to go in, and then the bar owner, the restaurant owner, you guys can't. Those boys got to go to the kitchen and get the food and blah, 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 blah. And then he got out and Petey was mad. And he was like, man, he said, man, I didn't know. And he was like, he didn't want to know.
That's right.
Okay.
That's right.
And a lot of people don't want to know. Okay.
Correct.
They don't.
Correct.
All right. So let's see here from Tiffany. Tiffany says here, she says, let's talk about sharecropping. My dad and all his cousins went down to North Carolina in the 1950s, early 60s to pick cotton and make his grandparents whole with the year's payments, right? With the year's payments by the sharecropper. Okay.
Yep.
You see my point. So this ain't 1865.
Yep.
This, she's saying in the 1960s, 50, late 50s and 60s, right?
Yep.
So we can go on and on. Who we got here? We got Reggie again. The propaganda, what do you say, Reg? The propaganda that was written about African Americans made us second-class citizens of the Republic. We are the people that we the people never plot. Absolutely. All right. Everything that was written in the Constitution, right? Well, I think I was, I remember I saw this clip Martin Luther King Jr. did a while ago, and he was like, all we're asking America is to keep your promise of what you put on paper.
That's right.
That's written.
Right.
Okay.
That's right.
And so, and he said, how did we get here? Right. And then, who is this? LCMGS. Tony, you have spoken before about the power of young people to make change. One of Martin Luther King's many great legacies were the empowerment of young people into the civil rights movement. Absolutely. Right. Here's the thing, though, man. I mean, excuse me. I'm LC. Here's the thing. The other thing, I think the Greensboro sitting in many moments led to the college age students. Can we speak to how leaders can motivate the next generation? Here's the thing, man. So excellent point. And you don't have that type of, I don't want to paint broad brushes here, because obviously there's probably young adults and pockets of America that's pushing back and trying to do stuff and registering people to vote and all that type stuff, right? Here's the thing, though. When I was growing up, the difference is history was passed down. Okay. Black people was telling your family's always taught you and told you what time it was. Okay. And you kept that legacy and that understanding of what we were always fighting the struggle. Remember, I grew up in Detroit. You grew up where? Okay. What did your mother or your father tell you when you were a kid growing up, and how you had to, when you had to get a job and stuff, how did you have to act?
Man, you got to be proper, prim, pristine, all of those.
And then what else? You had to work what?
Work
you
hard?
You had to work twice as hard.
Black tax.
Right. So those things you grew up with, your parents were telling me. I know my mother told me, right? You got to do this, you got to do that, you got to do this and that, right? And then to be fair, this is the other part that we have to look at, is that we today, we are living on the backs of the Martin Luther King Jr.'s and all the people that died and fought for us to have our rights today. To be fair here, all right? We wouldn't think about it, bro. You know, we've been blessed in our careers and the whole nine yards, and a lot of you who are watching our show, you have as well, okay? Had those people not did what they did, we wouldn't be sitting here with what we have today. That is a fact, right? Now, once you start getting that, you start becoming lazy. You start saying, we arrived, okay? We made it. We don't have to know about history no more. Those days are gone, blah, 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 blah. And that's just part of milking down that struggle, and not just struggle, that pride, that history, and understanding that this will always be a part of who you are, and you have to always be cognizant and understanding that at any time they can pull the rug from under you, which they're doing now, right?
Yeah.
And it's not. So to your question, That's what we need to do with our young people, right? Go ahead, Chris.
I got a different answer, and so I'm going to give you two history lessons. One of them is a universal history lesson of the United States of America. The children of World War I came from the Great Depression. And the reason why that becomes important is because we were in the Depression, and then we got into the war, but the Depression made everybody had to pony up and stick together and combine resources and struggle together to make us more collective. So they call them the greatest generation because they came from a sense of unity because they didn't have anything. Cool. Then they came out of that war and started making businesses with that same mentality. We got to build this great nation together. That's why they call them the greatest generation. Now, the second history lesson is a sports one. It's Tiger Woods. Tiger Woods was kicking ass constantly to where they started changing the courses to match what they called it tiger-proofing the courses. He was doing so well that they changed the whole system to go against him. The reason why these young folks, first of all, the lack of struggle, like Tony just talked about, for us to have a collective unity doesn't exist like it did in the civil rights era. That's number one, just like the greatest generation. The second part about tiger-proofing the courses is, soon as Stacey Abrams almost got the governorship, they changed the districts. They tiger-proofed it. As soon as we get some headway, they're not going to let this stuff happen again. They're going to keep redistricting. They're going to keep changing laws and doing what he's doing now to make sure we don't. As soon as we start getting ahead above water, good times, make it the way that we can, temporary layoff, he's going to come in and change some stuff to where we always on a swivel. You called it the chaos theory a year ago, you were like, it's just going to be, you know, rapid fire, muzzle flashes, and all that. And that's what this is. It's not just a distraction from the Epstein files. It's all of that. They're hitting us with so many things that we can't solidify our leadership, young folks, to be coordinated on a sense of what we should do because there's so much stuff to do now. That's the answer.
Yeah, I mean, so here's the thing, though.
Okay.
I hear that, right? And so number one, your answer about the greatest generation and stuff like that, I totally agree, right? There was a unity, there was a struggle, and when there's a struggle, people tend to come together, right? And because there's not as much of a struggle, they had no choice, right? Because there's not as much of a struggle, they don't, right? And then they kind of forget, that's in every, to be fair. You read that in the Bible, right? That's
absolutely
in every generation. The Jews were crying, save me, right? And then God saved them, and then as those generations went on, they were like, God who? That's human nature, all right?
Right.
But to her question is that we need to make sure our young people are educated about the struggle and about our history. And because when you know the history, then you're not going to, I think Reggie wrote it, you know, you try not to repeat it, or you will see things that come up and you say, we're going backwards and stuff to that nature, right? Here's the thing though, Chris, I want to get into why this is happening, right? Because these are calculated.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
They're calculated. Right. All right. And we need to understand that at the end of the day, these things, there's a strategy that's going on, okay, to try to, well, we know, make division. We know that, right? But also try to turn the clock back because we know white people haven't been discriminated against at some type of levels and stuff to that nature based on the civil rights. Stop. And they're peeling this shit back over and over. It doesn't really matter, right? But let's go into what the real thing is, because you said you don't believe in reverse discrimination, right? However, we've seen them peel back DEI type stuff. And I think I was chatting with somebody else. I forget who. She worked for the government. Oh, it was what's her name? Tarika, who came on, the government lawyer who's down in Atlanta.
She talked
about how now they strip, you know, you can't for the EEOC. Before, if you had a workplace situation and they fired me because I was black or a woman or Hispanic, and you had a recourse where you could go and file claims. But now they've shut, once they came in and started slashing all the DEI stuff they kind of shut that down, right?
Mm-hmm.
But at the end of the day, did they really shut it down?
Trump's remarks are his most explicit embrace of reverse discrimination and come a month after the president's chair of the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, which is responsible for enforcing civil rights laws against workplace discrimination, issued a PSA to white men. Let's remind you.
I'm Andrea Lucas, chair of the U.S. Equal Employment Opportunity Commission. Are you a white male who's experienced discrimination at work based on your race or sex? You may have a claim to recover money under federal civil rights laws. Contact the EEOC as soon as possible. Time limits are typically strict for filing a claim. The EEOC is the federal agency charged with enforcing federal anti-discrimination law against businesses and other private sector employers. The EEOC is committed to identifying, attacking, and eliminating all forms of race and sex discrimination, including against white male applicants and employees. Check out EEOC.gov to learn more and read our one-page explainer about DEI-related discrimination.
So EEOC, the Equal Employment, Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, said specifically to white men, not anybody equally, but specifically to white men, if you have a problem, we'll help you take care of it. The irony of the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission speaking just to a subset of individual, a white male. The thing about it is, because the EEOC exists and because these things were put in place, it wasn't exclusionary language. It was inclusive language. It was the I in DEI that was talked about because there was exclusionary practices against non-white men. The irony of it for me, and we're not going to go like we did last week, but it didn't say white women. It didn't say white people. It said, if you're a white dude, holler at me. Anybody else can get it how they live. That is ridiculous to me, how they're using these government agencies, these government-funded agencies with our tax money. It's not white men's tax money, Tony. I don't know if you knew this. But the EEOC is not run by white men's tax money. It's run by everybody's tax money. So how can everybody not be protected by everybody's tax money?
Yeah, and so that makes sense. Here's the thing, though, bro. So again, everything you said, I don't disagree with. But let's just, again, I want to keep it tight.
Okay.
In the beginning, they cut everything from DEI. Okay? So anything that had to do with diversity, equity, inclusion, we're getting rid of it. It's discriminatory. It's this and that, right? Now they're doing a PSA to recruit white people, white men.
Men.
Okay?
Men specifically.
And say,
yep.
Did you get discriminated against? If you feel you got discriminated against, reach out to us.
Right.
That's the issue, Chris. See what I'm saying?
Right.
Okay?
Right.
Where was that PSA 8 months ago when it came to black women, 300,000 black women getting laid off or fired? Okay, when the Doge thing was happening, did you see a PSA for that?
No.
Okay, now they're not even hiding it. Okay, they're not even hiding it, Chris. This is on purpose.
Yeah.
Okay, this wasn't said last year. This video was made, a month or so ago? Was it? Was it last week?
Yep.
A month ago? Stop. Mm-hmm. So this is the point. This shit is on purpose. Okay, so at the one end, they're talking about we don't need DEI because all it's doing is making race and it's dividing people and blah, the best person. But then at the same time, they put out a PSA and said, have you been a white man that's been discriminated against? It's time to fill out and don't wait. All right, don't wait. Get it. They did everything but write it for you. Okay.
Right.
And so that's one of the issues, my brother. Okay. You can see the hypocrisy.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So we had Martin Luther King who fought for everybody. Right. Let's be fair here. Right. And, you know, help put something together through nonviolence, because I want to go there, too. Right. He didn't say black people pick up guns and take over. It was nonviolence. OK. And that's how we were able to push through and get to where we are. But now they're coming back and they're all these little bitty things are starting to add up because they have a major strategy.
Yeah, and just to, you know, for a level of clarity for this platform, Martin Luther King wasn't, and somebody said it earlier, I just want to reiterate, wasn't the leader of black people. He was the leader of rights and equality. And so it was way more than just us in that struggle. It was a lot of brown folks. It was a lot of ladies. It was a lot of white folks who seen that this wasn't right that was part of it. The thing about it is when you talk about hypocrisy, what they're not recognizing, and maybe I'm just that bright, you're asking white men to sue other white men. Like, it's not a lot of black-owned corporations that's discriminating against white dudes getting jobs. So you're saying, hey, white dudes, come sue your cousin. It's a civil, it's the craziest thing in the world to me because you're having white on white crime at this point.
But here's the thing though. And I love, I forget who did this. Is this Reggie who put this up? What did he say here?
Let me see.
This is not even a puzzle anymore. All moves are being made in Project 2025.
Absolutely.
And that's the point. So let's go to that, right? Because that's where I wanted to go to, right? Thank you, Reg, for bringing that up, right? Because at the end of the day, this is a major strategy, okay? And let's show you what we mean by that.
You know, extremism experts are calling out the White House for sharing that AI-generated image last week that they say comes from a racist, far-right subculture. And the Southern Poverty Law Center previously called out DHS for using white nationalist and anti-immigrant images in their recruitment drives, Eddie. But here's what Trump's Deputy Chief of Staff and Homeland Security Advisor Stephen Miller said just a few days ago about the surge in ICE and Border Patrol enforcement in Minnesota. Let's watch this together.
Americans voted in a landslide to uphold the sovereignty of this country. Americans, by overwhelming majorities, oppose mass Somali fraud. Americans, by overwhelming majorities, just oppose Somali refugee resettlement in principle. So the public is behind this. Minnesota was once a pristine state, perfect education, no crime, no unrest, no violence, and then they ruined all of it, Laura, and President Trump is saving it.
So they remember when Minnesota was perfect, had perfect education.
It was perfect, bro. To those black people came in.
Land of milk and honey. Land of milk and honey. That's the dangerous part is that, like you said, from a historical perspective, people who don't want to remember, there's no data to support any of this. And I don't want to be the data guy, but there is no real tangible testimonies that said this was this. These people were inserted here, and this is where the trend line went. That's not how that works. It just didn't happen that way.
No, of course not, bro. We know that. But back to, I think it was Reggie who said that it's Project 2025. The strategy, what Stephen Miller just laid it out for you, right? Mm-hmm. Is that they're using race to divide people. Okay. And they want, so you know what? Let's do this because let's chat. Cause I want to play the next clip, which will my boy, the professor, from Princeton, he broke it down better than I could, right?
Why would Trump say his immigration policy is not based on race while agents acting on his behalf appear to be doing exactly that and sending a different message?
You know, that's because he's lying. Stephen Miller is explicit. He's Donald Trump's id. He's explicit in his commitments. He's explicit in what he's saying. Donald Trump and Stephen Miller and many of those folks in his administration are committed to the idea that this country must be a white republic. ICE is becoming the most funded federal law enforcement agency for one reason, because they're charged to make America white again. And I think we need to be explicit in that. That's the motivation behind this. It's not fraud. Because they just dismissed the case about welfare fraud in Mississippi and Brett Favre. It's not about criminality, right? It's about who they take to be, right? The real Americans. And I want to be very clear. When that ICE officer killed Renee Good, three shots, point blank range, they were very clear. They were drawing the lines of who are the people who are with us and who are the enemies. And those enemies can include white Americans who are committed to a more racially just and multiracial democracy.
The amazing part of the insecurities of white men is that they're making themselves out to be victims when the evidence doesn't support it. That's number one. But I would ask the people listening now, in the idea of where we're headed, I feel like we're at a point, and we talked about this, you know, before about this turning point, right? I feel like we're at a point where we're allowing this in Congress, who should be stopping this. People who are in charge are elected to intervene in these things should be standing up and saying something. So my confusion is, somebody please educate me. Why aren't the people that are in charge being grown-ups about this? Because we can't just assume that a lot of people, a lot of old folks, right, old black folks that I talk to, they feel like, well, if they allowing it, it must be okay because they have our best interest in mind. If they sell it at the stores, it must be healthy, or if the FDA would have stopped it. They forget about cigarettes, right? People forget about cigarettes. Like, if they're allowing the consumption of these things or the proliferation of these things, or if they let him go take over another country, or if they, not to go off into that, but what I'm saying is, where are the guardrails? And because the guardrails aren't being reinforced, we have no choice, if we're not educated, but to assume this must be okay, when everything that's in our being is saying it's not okay. Why are we not being protected?
So, but Chris, they don't want to protect, buddy. So Stephen, my man, doctor.
When you say they,
but the administration, Project 2025, bro. It's their strategy. Okay. My man just broke it down to you.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
At the end of the day, it's about make America white again.
Correct.
Okay. That's it. Right. So there is no Congress help or this and that.
Right.
That's why they wrote they told people this before Trump even got elected. They leaked Project 20. I don't want to say leaked, but they put it out there before. And this is what we're going to do. And at first, I ain't tied to this. Yeah, they are. So it's part of the strategy, my friend. That's the key to this. Okay. It's a strategy.
Right, but we were built with checks and balances to stop these type of strategies, Tony, with the judicial, the legislative, and the executive branches. Who's supposed to be stopping this, and why aren't they?
So, Chris, let me ask you this, man.
Yes, sir. Give it to me.
Tell me when Congress, okay, stopped segregation. Why didn't you stop that? Why didn't Supreme Court, eventually they did, through protests, through time, but they could have did it 100 years ago. Why didn't they do that? Why didn't the Congress, Supreme Court, the judicial, didn't turn back voting rights?
Right.
Why didn't they?
Right.
Because they didn't want to.
They
wanted to keep black people oppressed. They wanted to keep this country from a racial identity white.
Yep.
Okay, buddy? Yep. And so at the end of the day, that's the strategy. And when black people start rising, and to be fair, again, let's go not just to black people, because who's the number one minority from a population standpoint?
Public enemy number one, Latinos.
Okay, so you Hispanics is the number one minority population in the United States. And it's a fact that by 2050, the way things are going, the United States will not be a dominated majority white country.
That's correct.
Okay, that's a fact. Okay, so now we got to stop that. We got to do whatever we can. So this is why you're seeing civil rights being attacked and rolled back.
Yep.
This is why white men, are you being discriminated? Let us know. This is where you have let's just go into Minneapolis, the Somalis real fast, right? See, this is, and let's go to your point, common sense type point here. Okay, at the end of the day, they're based on this fraud that happened in Minneapolis. There were, 80, 90, something of that nature, Somalis that were involved in it with the fake child care and hold on yards, right? Who was the mastermind?
Oh, girl.
Who?
A fair-skinned lady.
A white lady was the mastermind, and they just did a piece on her on CBS This Morning, which is kind of interesting, right? So check it out. You don't hear her name. All right. He just got finished saying that Minnesota was pristine. It was clean.
Perfect schools.
There was perfect schools. And these people have ruined it. Now, I was going to go back to this for a second. How many people, Somalis live in Minneapolis?
Oh, it can't be a large percentage of population. Maybe 50,000, 60,000?
70, 80,000. Right. How big is Minneapolis?
Bigger than that. Million, by the millions, right?
Maybe million and a half. How many Somalis were involved in this fraud? 50, 60 people. Now, they're all criminals.
All of them.
They're all. Every one of them is horrible. They're all, yep. And this is what yep. they do.
Absolutely.
Seen it when one black person or Hispanic or whatever, they do something that breaks the law, whatever the case may be, they broad brush, they're all that way. They're all. When my man, who's the dude who got on the hotel in Vegas, all right, and shot up a bunch of people at the concert, killed 50, 60 people at the concert, white dude, right? Did you hear that all white people are murderers? Did you hear that they... No, when it comes to that, they make excuses. I mean, like, they got radicalized. All right? They're radicalized. Now, that's the word today. They're radicalized.
Yeah, radicalized.
Right?
Yeah,
they're radicalized, right? But regardless, it doesn't, instead of seeing that person as an individual, which makes sense, they did something bad, they're an individual. We don't wipe out the whole group because one person did something bad. But when it comes to people of color, it happens all the time and is ramping back up today, all right? Based on their strategy, okay? That's the issue. And that's why we wanted to talk about this today, my brother, right? Because Martin Luther King Jr., who we celebrated his birthday yesterday, and we got to give him, we don't even give him enough kudos for what he and hundreds and thousands of black Americans, and not just black Americans, there were Jewish people, there were white people that were protesting. Mm-hmm. There was a bunch of people all coming together, right? Like you said, rights for everybody, right? And they lost out. People died. They lost their jobs. Some lost their livelihood. They lost, buddy, a ton of stuff for me and you today to sit here in a studio and a mic and do the things that we do and the blessings that a lot of African-American people and people of color all over and job access and protection of the law, all those things came from their efforts. Mm-hmm. Okay, let's be fair. And we see it on a movie and this and that, and we take it for granted. And because somebody wrote the question about children getting involved and being more involved in what's going on. But the majority of people today don't even want to get off the couch, okay, for anything. Right. And this is dangerous because of that. That's where this can go, because now they're pushing it out big time, bro. And at the end of the day, we need to come together as a community, not just black people, people, Hispanic, everyone. And we're seeing that. And that was his point. His point was Renee Good got shot. And you said this last week, right? That now you're the enemy too. Okay. It just because you're white, it doesn't matter. You're the enemy too, because if you believe in multicultural or racial democracy, we can't have that.
Tony, remind them before we close out, remind them of what you said about the length of time that protest takes, because one of the things that makes protest not as effective in this day and age is limited vigilance and short-term, investments. So tell them about Montgomery and how long that the bus boycott took.
But it was 300 and it was a year and a month or something like that, 13 months, something like that. It was 40,000 black people decided not to ride the bus.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
And stuck with it
for over a year. And here's the thing. That was 90%. So you still had 10% that still rode the bus.
That's right.
Okay.
Right.
But it didn't matter. Right. You had the majority of people.
That's correct.
That because they believed that this was wrong and they were tired of it, that they, to unity, they came together to struggle. Can we get a bunch of people today to do some, can we?
Man.
I hear a lot of people talk, but to be committed, because at the end of the day, they don't see that struggle. Right. They got flat screen TVs on their wall.
Right.
OK.
Right.
They're working here. They're working there. And they don't recognize that this is being snatched. And they ain't even hiding it no more. Right in front of your eyes. And what's going to happen if everybody doesn't get together and really takes this seriously? That we're going to see a situation where another 5, 10 years, 15 years, that people are like, How did we get here? We can't vote.
Absolutely.
We can't do this. You're going to see this is not, remember in church where they used to, you know, it was the brimstone,
fire and brimstone.
You better do right or you're going to hell. Remember that? Right. Because they figured they had to scare you to death for you to not do something. Right. This ain't that type of message here. These are facts. And all you got to do, don't go by you and I, what we're saying on this platform. They can look it up themselves.
Absolutely.
Right. And so this ain't the preacher holding the Bible and saying you can't read it because you ain't good enough. Right.
Right.
So final thoughts, my brother.
I think that, you know, one of the things is there's nothing new under the sun. These playbooks have been drawn and quartered for centuries. This has been done over and over again since Wilmington. Right. It's a situation where there's a coordinated effort to stop the proliferation of the advancement of colored people or anybody else that's not a white man. She said it explicitly. There was no editing. There was no fake news. There was nothing else. And we have to see what time it is and kind of take off the veil and understand that if we don't do anything, we're just cruising down the lazy river of life. We got to start swimming. And we got to come together and have these conversations. And you can call us activists or whatever you'd like to call us. Just don't call us collect. But the reality of it is, you know, something has to be done because, as you stated, it's not going to be until you can't wait until it happens to you. But what I can tell you is it's going to happen to you if you wait too long. So you have to have a level of empathy for it happening to other people being snatched out their homes, for it happening to other people who are being denied jobs and opportunities and women getting fired and all this other stuff. It's sad for those who it happens to, but it shouldn't have to be one degree of separation for you to realize this is a societal thing. And as a democratic republic, we have to enforce and reinforce the democracy of it all. And we're just not doing that. We're failing. That's my final.
Absolutely, buddy. Thank you, bro. You're hitting it around the head. I'm going to say this, right? And I want everybody to hopefully, you know, meditate on this, marinate on it, right? Civil rights was never about taking something away. It was about finally letting people in. When loss of privilege is confused with loss of rights, truth becomes the first casualty. And when truth disappears, division takes over. And that's where we are today in the crossroads for America. And we're standing in that right now. So please, guys, I implore everyone, black, white, Jewish, Hispanic, Asian, learn your history and get on the side of truth, right? Understand what happened, what is happening, and don't be used. And that's really what this is about. They're going to use people so they can create more power, more division for only a few people of this great country.
We want to thank y'all for tuning in and contributing. We know the voice is a powerful thing. You want to stay unmuted, and we have to keep talking about it. So one of the ways that we try to talk about it here is we have a show called Need to Know with Nasinga. You know, every week, Dr. Nasinga Burton brings her views and her perspectives to a Black Executive Perspective podcast where she dives into timely and crucial topics that shape our communities and our world. And this is something where she actually can go in and give you the line and the letter to all the things that we talk about, all things that we exchange on here today. Tune in for those type of nuggets. You don't want to miss it.
Absolutely. And don't forget to check out BEP launched a new show called A Mixed Executive Perspective, right? On the Black Executive Perspective Network. A podcast hosted by Grace Food and Corey. The show explores biracial identity, executive leadership, fear, purpose, belonging, giving voice to perspectives too often left unheard. Honest, thoughtful, and necessary. You don't want to miss it. A Mixed Executive Perspective here on a Black Executive Perspective podcast.
Yeah, last Wednesday she had herself on the couch, boy. It was a therapy session.
I mean, my girl Grace is going to kill it.
Man,
I mean, wait till you see tomorrow's episode. You guys got to, if you ain't following A Mixed Executive Perspective, you need to jump on that because
be like,
I was even listening. We were recording. I was I said, for real?
Yeah.
So,
like a Hollywood script. It's like
my God, Hollywood is real, right? It's
right,
her lived experiences as being a senior executive in the fashion industry. Biracial executive. You guys got to check it out because
She's
breaking it down.
You also have to check out Pull Up Speak Up. Don't miss the episode of Pull Up Speak Up. The next episode comes out where our roundtable dives into hard-hitting topics. We bring some people into the room and let them hash it out. Every voice counts. Every perspective sparks change. It's not just talk. It's a call to action. And we want you to join that revolution for Pull Up Speak Up. And then, of course, you know, I always love ending our segments with a reminder for our call to action, and that's less, L-E-S-S, because our goal here is to eliminate all forms of discrimination, bring about that unity, and to achieve this, we're asking you to embrace less. The L is for learn. You want to educate yourself on social, racial, cultural, historical nuances so you can speak from an area of informed decisions.
Absolutely. And then after you learn, you have the letter E, which stands for empathy. Now, since you've enlightened yourself and now since you've learned about people that you're not familiar with, now you can be more empathetic because you can put yourself in their shoes.
The first S stands for share. You want to share your insights, enlighten others. The worst thing you could do is be quiet. So even if you're not actively out there marching and doing something, speak as often as you can about the truth that's going on in our world. Talk about it.
Absolutely. And then after you share, the final S stands for stop. We want everyone to stop discrimination as it walks in your path. As we talked about on this episode, right? People are pushing discrimination of narratives and stuff to that nature out, and it's going unchecked. And we're not asking you to put your life in danger or anything like that. It is as simple as if you're sitting at the Sunday dinner table with Aunt Jenny and Uncle Joe, and Aunt Jenny or Uncle Joe says something that's inappropriate, instead of sitting there with your mouth open being shocked or giggling, you say, Aunt Jenny, Uncle Joe, we don't believe that. We don't say that. And you stop it right there. Believe it or not, just by doing that little bitty part in our own homes and community can make a big difference, because now we'll build a more fair, more understanding world, and we'll all see the change that we want to see, because less will become more.
Make sure you tune in next Tuesday's live. Make sure you check out other episodes in the catalog. We referenced some old game that we gave. Go check that out. But be on the lookout for some new game in 2026. We come in hot and heavy as we move forward. But we want you to go to the website and sign up for the newsletter. The Monthly Perspective is the newsletter. You got to sign up for it. Go ahead and put your clicks in, get that going, and then leave us a review. Let us know what we need to be talking about. And then subscribe wherever you're listening to the podcast. Where can they find us besides here live on Tuesdays, Tony?
Well, here, they can find us here on a Black Executive Perspective podcast on YouTube, Apple, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. And follow our social channels of LinkedIn, X, YouTube, TikTok, Facebook, and Instagram at a Black Exec. And more importantly, before we sign off, I want to thank all of our listeners who joined us today on this very important topic. Your engagement means a lot by you sharing your comments. This is great because this is, you know, Chris and I are not looking to be an echo chamber, you know, and more importantly, I'm always looking for people to disagree and say something totally different. And because this platform is the people's platform. So continue to come and support us. More importantly, when you come next week, bring somebody with you. Okay. And let's build this community together. And we also will say, if you're up to it, we would love to have you be a guest on BEP Live so you can provide your perspective on the topics that we talk on a daily, on a weekly basis, right? So also for my co-host with the most, my boy down in Dallas, Crispy Reed. This is my boy. We've been doing this for a while. I couldn't do it without him. And talking about a knowledgeable brother, really love him a lot. But more importantly, we love you. And guess what? We're out.
A Black Executive Perspective.